One of the most popular skiers on the world tournament scene will be out of action until next season. I'm Tony Lightfoot, and we'll be interviewing Adam Sadelmeyer next.
The expressed views of the guests on this podcast are theirs alone and not necessarily endorsed by the host, TWBC, or any associated sponsor. Conversations that are robust yet balanced, on point and to the point. You are listening to The Talk of Tournament Water Skiing. This is the TWBC podcast. And now, here's your host, Tony Lightfoot.
Well, greetings one and all. I am the aforementioned Tony Lightfoot, and this is the latest edition of the TWBC podcast. Now, within the last few days, a little bit of news has come across my bowels, so to speak, in that one of the most highly decorated overall skiers in a tournament water skiing and a general all-round nice guy, Adam Sadelmeyer, has just found out that he will not be able to compete for the best part of the next 12 months because he had tested positive for a heart-related substance, which he'd been taking the last few seasons and has only now been put on the banned list as a diuretic. So I decided to get to the source of this latest news within the skiing world. And to that end, I am joined by the one, the only former world overall champion, Adam Sadelmeyer. How are you doing, sir?
Hey, Tony. I'm well. How are you?
Not too bad, not too bad under the circumstances. I'm sure that this piece of news that came across was quite surprising. But let's try and fill in a few of the gaps. Starting off from the very beginning. Well, actually, before we even do that, let's try and find out a little bit of the news that actually happened to you, because what was the medication in question? It was hydrochlorothiazide, wasn't that correct?
Yes, so that is the reason, and just kind of summarized summarize everything that happened in a short form, like you said in your intro. I'm banned until the April of 2023 for testing positive for this blood pressure medication during the 2021 World Championships. So that's sort of the long version of the story, you know. And at the very beginning, I just wanted to kind of thank you for, you know, giving me a platform to be able to kind of explain my situation. You know, I know that I sort of made it public through a social media post a couple days ago. I've been dealing with this for the good last 5 or 6 months. And there's just so much that you can cover in one social media post, and there's just more to the story. So thank you for giving me this platform, and I'll be happy to kind of, you know, walk you through it and answer any questions that you might have.
Okay, absolutely. We're going to try and fill in a few gaps here. So the reason why you're taking this medication and was for a family history of heart-related condition, was that correct?
Correct, yeah. So just to take you to the, you know, very beginning, I have a big family history of high blood pressures and heart-related diseases. You know, my dad has been taking a blood pressure medication since his early 40s or late 30s. He's undergone procedures to sort of, you know, help with the high blood pressure. So really, it's been sort of fighting it for a long time. His dad, my grandfather, actually passed away when my dad was 12. So I never even got to, you know, meet my grandpa. He died in his 50s for a heart attack. So, you know, long history there from my dad's side, and then, you know, high cholesterol from both sides of the family and all that fun stuff. So, you know, not the best genetic pool from that standpoint, but, you know, it's something that can be managed, and you know, that's something that I've been doing for most of my adolescent life. At the very beginning, you know, I started seeing a doctor right out of the college around 2012. I was always on the higher end of the normal blood pressure spectrum. And I was able to kind of keep it managed through, you know, diet and salt intake and lifestyle choices. But it was around the 2016 or 17 as I got a little bit older, you know, when it just started getting out of control more and more. And then finally, you know, the decision was made by my family doctor to put me on the medication in 2018.
Okay, and that medication was HTZZ, which is the acronym for hydrochlorothiazide. And I've actually spoken to someone, actually my spouse, on that medication. She's actually taking it herself, and it is used quite commonly to treat high blood pressure. And you said in your social media post, one of the reasons why it's prescribed quite a bit is because it has very few side effects. And so you took this medication, and at the time, it wasn't on the WADA or a banned list. Wasn't that correct?
So that is actually incorrect. It has always been there, at least to the best of my knowledge. And I think we'll kind of get to that point. But to the best of my knowledge, it has been there before I got prescribed the medication. I just sort of, you know, the way I verified whether that's the case or not, and what has happened since, is essentially the reason, you know, why I'm facing the 15-month ban. So, that's not correct.
Okay, so it's been on the list, but didn't you have a TUE or anything like that, a therapeutic use exemption, as a lot of athletes do for medications that would ordinarily you would need to actually function on a day-to-day basis, but could be abused if that medication wasn't used for its intended purpose?
Yeah, so that's actually a great point. And the TUV, for people that do not know, is a therapeutic use exemption, if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah, you are.
And under, you know, any circumstances, if an athlete has to take a medication that's on the WADA list, you know, you are requested to ask for one. And it's the case for even if you have, you know, an emergency or something along those lines, you always have to request one. So I'll take a little bit of a step back and talk about the medication first, if that's okay with you.
Yes, absolutely.
And, you know, by all means, this is something that I've learned through the process. You know, I'm not a doctor, so, you know, don't take this as a medical advice. But, you know, HTZ, or the hydrochlorothiazide, is essentially a water pill. It's a starter medication, and the reason for that is because, like you said, it has very, very few side effects. So, you know, if you're able to manage your blood pressure just with that medication, it really is not a big deal, and it doesn't have any long-term effect. In terms of it being prescribed, it's one of the two or three starter medications available to the doctors in the United States to prescribe to their patients. At the time when, you know, I was kind of thinking about getting on one of the medications, you know, we kind of went through the choices, went through the side effects, and unfortunately, right now, we know, unfortunately, landed on the hydrochlorothiazide. You know, and in terms of the medication being, you know, very common, I think through my research, when I was looking into this, I found out it's like a 15, you know, most prescribed medication than in the United States. So it's everywhere. it's common, and it's common because it works and it doesn't have any side effects, right? Mm-hmm. So that's that one. And the medication itself, and I think I explained a little bit of this in my post, is, you know, what it does is it essentially makes your body produce more urine, right? So
a diuretic.
Correct. Yeah. So that's why it falls within that S5 class under WADA rules. And for whatever reason, the positive side effect of making more urine just happens to be low blood pressure. Again, I'm not a doctor. Don't ask me why. Right.
Yeah.
So the medication itself, you know, I don't know, you know, people when you talk about doping, you know, people start thinking about steroids and performance enhancing drugs. But, you know, this hydrochlorothiazide is truly not that, right? It doesn't really give you any benefits in terms of, you know, your performance and recovery or whatever the case might be.
But it's
it's
a diuretic and a masking agent, which basically flushes those impurities out of your body. If you're trying to use an anabolic steroid or anything like that, one way you can hide the presence of that is flushing it out using a diuretic or a masking agent.
Exactly. And that's essentially where I was going with this. It is very commonly abused. There is no question about that. And the way it is abused is exactly how you just described it, right? People that do take, you know, performance enhancing drugs, you know, for competitive reasons, then use hydrochlorothiazide or whatever the case might be to get everything flushed through their system, you know, just in case they get drug tested during the competition, right? So that's why it's prohibited, and yeah, that's it.
All right, let's go to the actual test itself. I'm sure that there are people that are listening to this, and maybe a very, very select few that have actually been drug tested as part of WADA policy or within the National Federation or that kind of stuff. And you were drug tested at the World Championships. Now, because you weren't in the top three in any of the events, commiserations, by the way, you're definitely good. You would have been good enough to been in the overall competition as far as I'm concerned. But anyway, you were randomly selected for a drug to be tested. Now, once they brought you to one side and you had to go to a secure place, a secure restroom, whatever it was, did you have to disclose that you had been taking HCTZ to them at the time, or what was that like?
Yes, and if you don't mind, I want to take a step back and talk about the TUV because I kind of forgot about that. So
during the drug test, if you have a TOE, obviously it's in your best interest to say to the drug testing folks, wherever they come from, I have a TOE for this drug. If you find it, there's a reason why.
Correct. That is correct. And there is a problem with the S5 class of the diuretics or the hydrochlorothiazide that if you are an international athlete, you cannot even ask for a TUV for this type of drug. So, you know, that is certainly something that I failed to do, and in the process, obviously failed to learn that there's just simply, you know, you just cannot take it under any circumstances, which is crazy, right? Because
yeah, absolutely,
you know, people are able to take, let's say, Adderall, right? A drug that, to the best of my knowledge, is proven to give you an edge it's prohibited by F1 and all the racing sports because it is proven to kind of increase your focus and your reaction times. You know, it's prohibited in NHL and all the other sports, yet, you know, you are able to take it for therapeutic reasons. And I think people use it to treat is it HDB or something like that, right? HDB or whatever. So, you know, a little bit crazy, but that's just how it goes. So to kind of circle back to the drug testing process in the competition, for people that are listening and that don't know, I don't know the specific rules, but I think that in the pool of the finalists, the winner automatically gets taken for the drug test, and then the place two through, you know, whatever the final count is put in a pool, and then the random name is drawn out of the hat. And, you know, that I ended up fourth in slalom, so that's essentially kind of what happened, right? And I don't want to self-incriminate here, you know, myself, but I've been on this drug since 2018. Sorry. So if you do the math, you know, I got second at Worlds. You know, I've won professional tournaments. It just so happens that, you know, I never was drug tested. And some athletes, some federations require the athletes to do the whereabouts under WADA, and they get randomly drug tested. You know, that is simply not the case with my federation. So, you know, it's not that I have been avoiding stuff. It's just it's not required of me, right?
Yeah, I've heard of stories, you know, from, you know, from like the Italian Federation. I mean, there was one story one time that involved the Italian Drug Testing Authority, whatever that is. They come under WADA, and they basically surprised Thomas De Gasperi at the door of his house at one time, and you know he had to produce the sample, that kind of stuff. I mean, it varies from certain federations, and I found that the federations that tend to be closest to their national Olympic committees, as so far as support is concerned, tend to be the ones that follow that process more strictly in terms of searching out the athletes and requiring them to make a spot test, no matter where they happen to be at, no matter what time or day or night.
Correct. You know, and it just varies country by country. I don't think it's necessarily related to, you know, monetary benefits. It's just how the country is set up. Because, you know, obviously I'm married to Alex. She, you know, represented United States in water skiing for the longest time, you know, and she's been drug tested, you know, numerous times since we've been together. You know, we get someone knocking on the door. It's usually at 5 a.m. It's usually me opening the door, and here they stand, you know, coming to drug tester. So it's a fairly common occurrence for some. That are, you know, required by the country to fill out the whereabouts and be part of the program, but not for the others.
Indeed. So, recall that day when you received a notification that you had been tested and had a HCTZ in your system. I mean, not the normal protocol is to inform you that your A sample has tested positive. Then they're going to go to the B sample, and then if that correlates, then a sanction would be handed down to you, and the 15 months is apparently what you've gotten. But tell us about that day that you got the actual notification.
Yeah, so you know, the drug testing process itself, it's really not that new to me, right? I've been competing on the international scene, you know, since being under 14, right? So, you know, I've been drug tested, like it's gotta be more than 10 times or 10, 15 times in my career. So, you know, I know exactly, you know, what the process is, you know, and how you're supposed to approach it. So certainly, you know, not something that, you know, I would feel anxious about or nervous to kind of, you know, go through.
But I mean, you must have been quite anxious over the last three seasons, having started to take HCTZ, you know, knowing full well that that was on the banned list, right?
So this is where you're wrong, right? Because I did not know that the drug is not allowed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was not purposely taking the drug knowing that if I get drug tested, I'll be in trouble. I took the drug not realizing that it's on the prohibited list. And we'll get to the reasons what, like, kind of what went into that, you know, what went into that, me not knowing, you know, and ultimately, like with, if you break a law or with anything, you know, if you don't know, that doesn't really excuse you, right? Which is the reason why I cannot ski competitively until April of next year, right? So. Mm-hmm. You know, I wasn't like shaking or being scared or you know, trying to avoid the drug test. I simply just didn't know that it's not allowed. So, you know, at the day of the drug test, right, they you know, you finish skiing and they kind of stand by you, pull you to the side, take you to their setup. You drink a bunch of water, you know, or beers or whatever, if it's under, you know, after a tournament, you're allowed to do that, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you fill out a bunch of paperwork. It used to be all handwritten. Now it's in the iPad, you know, on an iPad. And then you go through all this process where, you know, you gotta pull your own kind of sealed bag and, you know, sealed containers. You gotta verify the numbers, you know, so that there's, you know, almost zero chances of your sample getting mishandled or misplaced or whatever the case might be. So it's, you know, it's the whole process that the officer kind of walked, that's there with you this whole time, walks you through. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of it all, he goes to the restroom with you, you know, watches you fill up all the containers, then walks you through the procedures, how to seal them, you know, and all that stuff.
Signature on the forms and all that kind of stuff and verify that you've done this, that, and the other, and everything was above board.
Right. And so this is actually where my problem number one comes in, and I'm getting to that, right? So this was done all electronically on the iPad. You know, once everything is sealed up, put in the box, you hit, you know, okay on the iPad, and you're good to go, right? Mm. So I went through all that process. It was on Saturday, late in the day, you know, and I walked back to my car, and I'm putting my ski into the car, and in that moment, I realized, oh, shoot, I did not indicate that I'm actually taking the hydrochlorothiazide, because I simply, I mean, it might be hard to believe for some, but I just simply forgot, right? Because
mm-hmm.
It's something that I take every morning for the last 3 years. Yes, you know, they do ask you about your prescriptions. I just put an A for, I just simply forgot. So then I walk back to the testing facility, and I tell them, hey, you know, I forgot to put my prescription. I can get my wife to kind of send me the photo of the bottle that I have at home. Is there any way that we can retrieve the form and that I can put it back, you know, retrospectively? And obviously the answer was no, because everything is, you know, done through internet electronically. So once you submit, there's just no way of sort of retrieving that form. Now, and in hindsight, whether I put it on the form that day or didn't, really doesn't matter, because it would get me into the same situation, you know, either way. It just maybe makes this look a little bit shady for people that don't know me, right? It does make it, I mean, I understand. It does make it seem like I was trying to hide it, which we all know that there's simply no way.
But, right? I mean, from what you're telling me, I mean, you've been drug tested. I mean, ever since you were back in the junior days, that kind of stuff. And I mean, you've had to, in your day skiing in Europe. And I mean, this is not your first rodeo when it comes down to these drug testing. But I mean, it seems to me that the procedure with the iPad and compared to like a written signed form or that kind of stuff, you know, that was something that changed, and the difference in how that looked, you know, caused you to make what is on the surface just a clerical error, I would say.
Yes, and that's essentially how. When I went through sort of the appeals and committees, then that's essentially, you know, what we try to explain. But again, once you get deep into the process and you get WADA, you know, involved, you know, those are the folks that don't know you. You know, they just simply see you as a number, and, you know, to them, everything looks shady, right? I mean, they're used to dealing with true offenders, you know, and they've probably seen everything in the book. So, you know, I'm not necessarily, again, it wouldn't matter either way, but that's just a beginning or continuation of, you know, what I feel were just super unfortunate mistakes that led to this point. You know what I mean? And again, ultimately a reason why I can't ski.
Yeah, it also seems to me that you met the guy afterwards, told him, hey, listen, sorry to bring this up, but I am taking HTTZ, you know, and I've been taking it for the last 3 years. I mean, you can go back to my previous drug test. You'll find it there. I have a pre-existing health condition, but it seemed to me, I mean, you were trying to do your due diligence in saying that you're taking this medication, but they just weren't prepared to take on anything else in terms of information after the pee went into the cup and you signed electronically.
Correct. You know, and last time I was drug tested before then was in 2017 when I won World Games in Poland, right? That all the forms were on the paper. I'm not really sure if that matters that much, but the most important point here is that I wasn't taking the medication then. So, you know, my previous test was in 2017, no blood pressure medication. The next test since then was the 2021. And, you know, I don't, to their defense, I don't think that, you know, the officers kind of, you know, doing the drug testing themselves, I don't think that they had an ill intentions in mind, you know, and at least I don't feel that way. It's just simply part of the process, right? It's very standardized to avoid any sort of mishaps and mistakes, and, you know, not being able to go back and change the forms is probably part of it. You know, if the same were to happen in Poland, where it wasn't electronically done, it was done on the paper, I don't know if they would let you add stuff, you know, after the fact either, just because it's, you know, it's all signed, sealed, it's just part of the process. So you know, they don't open themselves up to people with ill intentions trying to cheat the system.
All right, then. So you'd gotten the notification that that they found a medication that was on the banned list, an S5 diuretic, a masking agent. So obviously, the fact that it was in your system wasn't a shock to you. The fact that you would be given a ban, you know, was no doubt was a little bit of a shock to your system, and the amount of time that you would be away from competition was a little unsettling. So what measures did you take after that? I mean, did you seek any legal recourse or discourse there to try and rectify what was on the surface a clerical error?
Yeah, so, you know, essentially, it really wasn't like an all of a sudden realization, if I'm being honest, right? It was like a painful, slow realization that the consequences I am facing are, you know, far more severe than I could have ever imagined. You know, so basically I was notified by IWSF, let's say maybe a month later, right? So in November. And when I got the initial email, you know, I remember responding within like 5 minutes, and I'm like, oh, hey, you know, I was wondering if this would happen. You know, I've been taking this blood pressure medication. I'm going to get you all my doctor's reports. Here's the photo of my prescription. You know, let me know what else you need from me so that we can take care of this small issue as fast as we can, right? Not knowing that, oh, like I'm you know, I might be facing ban. Like, that didn't even cross my mind. It wasn't until a couple days lapsed since then when I got a response where like, no, you don't understand. This is a big deal, you know, and the standard sort of time for ban could be up, you know, north of 2 years. Like, this is serious. And I was like, oh crap, like, this is a big deal. You know, I've got to kind of do the best I can, or everything that's within my power, you know, to put together, you know, my defense, so that I can sort of try and explain myself better. And it was at that point where, you know, I engaged with a law firm and lawyer and kind of went through that process.
All right, then. So handed down a 15-month ban. It you just said it could have been a heck of a lot worse. It could have meant that with the next World Championships coming up in 2023, you could potentially be missing out. But 15 months would mean that the ban would end in April, and that would at least put you in a chance to qualify for Masters with I don't know what they're going to do, whether they're going to do with the free tournament LCQ or other tournaments that'll be taking place around about that time. So, you know, 15 months sounds long, and it is long. It is April 2023, but it could have been a heck of a lot longer.
Correct. So, you know, I'm not happy about it, right? Because deep down, I know that this is all just a huge misunderstanding that unfortunately WADA or the people making those decisions don't see that way. And, you know, in my research into sort of the previous cases under WADA and all the other governing bodies around the world, you know, it turns out that handing down sentences for this type of drug is actually not necessarily a huge problem, but very inconsistent. It varies greatly, you know, on a case-by-case basis. And that goes for, you know, both the severity and the length of the punishment, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can, you know, the spectrum, I mean, it ranges anywhere from sort of like a public notice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where that's all you get, all the way to 2 years, 4 years, or whatever the case might be. Now, granted that the people on the longer side of the spectrum, you know, have had their samples tested for not only the hydrochlorothiazide, but also other drugs in their system. And then people, you know, on the very short end of the spectrum, you know, range anywhere from, you know, actually high blood pressure. Someone getting, you know, having to go to a emergency room for severe case of high blood pressure and being given this drug as a emergency. Or what I discovered is that there might still be, I'm not sure about that, but a huge problem with the cross contamination. So it's athletes, you know, taking vitamin supplements or whatever that the case might be, you know, being made in the same place as these drugs. And it just somehow happens, you know, to find itself into their supplements and then into their system.
Yes, indeed. And I'm going to be honest. I mean, with the timing of the worlds and that kind of stuff, you know, I was looking down the list of, like, for Swiss Pro and for the LCQs. I didn't see your name on the list. I'd thought you flat out retired. To be honest with you, you got Alex, you got two wonderful kids. You know, you'd been world overall champion. You had fourth place, tied fourth place in slalom, that kind of stuff. And I thought you'd have just said, okay, I've done my bit. Let's settle down. I mean, I've got everything that I want, that I've tried to obtain within the sport of water skiing. Now it's time to focus your attention on your kids and everything else and your career and that kind of stuff. I never thought for a moment until this Facebook post came up that your absence from the sport would be anything other than maybe just retirement.
Yeah. And, you know, actually it's sort of played into my cards to where I think that a lot of people maybe thought that. So I avoided a lot of, conversations or having to, you know, kind of, you know, not tell people on purpose because I didn't want to make this public until I'm sort of at the tail end of the process, right? Because, at that point, you still don't know what it's going to be, what the outcome, what the severity and everything that's going to sort of happen. So, you know, I didn't really want to say anything until I know my worst case scenario, to not give, people room to speculate and spread, you know, false information. Because, I mean, ultimately, you know, people that know me, know me well, and know the sport, you know, they know where all this is, you know, that the way that I feel, right? That is all just a huge misunderstanding. So that really kind of what matters most, but I wanted to present everybody with facts that I simply didn't have for, you know, what is it, almost six months.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, for the next few months until April, what are you going to do?
That's funny because you reached out to me kind of saying that, you want to do this. And I knew that this question was coming. I didn't really want to sound like a downer. So I really wasn't sure what I'm going to tell you. But, I actually am... I did have some, let me kind of take a step back here. I did still have some options to go through the process and try and reduce the sentence, or I don't want to call it a sentence, but you know, reduce the ban period. And we still might do that. So the 15 months is the worst case scenario. Now I'm kind of trying to decide whether I want to keep pursuing this, you know, kind of looking at it from the negatives and positives, right? But given the nature of the water ski season, you know, I simply don't think that there's a way that I'm going to be given, if I go through the process, that I'm going to be given a, let's say, reduced ban of 6 months, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe the best case scenario, you know, I can get down to 12 months or whatever the case might be, which lands into, you know, beginning of the year. And that's the off season for us. So, you know, to me, it kind of truly doesn't matter whether it's the beginning of the April or March. I mean, yeah, I wanted to go back to Woomba Masters one more time because I love Australia.
Of course.
So that's the only event. But you know, in the grand scheme of things, the benefit of having the ban reduced by a couple of months just sort of outweigh the stress and the anxiety and the amount of work
and the cost as well. Because I mean, no doubt there's going to have to be some money changing hands to, you know, to get the legal wheels in motion, you know. And it'll I mean, even if you get it reduced by a month, you know, it's cost you enough to get it reduced by that amount of time for the sake of having to fork out $2,000-$3,000 just to get to Australia and to compete there.
Correct. Yeah. So it's just, you know, the positives sort of got out, you know, where didn't compare to, you know, the ability of kind of being able to put it out there. You know, I can't tell you what the first day of the Facebook post felt like, right? I just felt like I've had this, you know, cooked up on or pent up on the inside. And that day I certainly felt very relieved and the happiest I've been you know, over the last 6 months. So it definitely was a kind of a big day for me. You know, I certainly appreciated a lot of people sort of speaking up in their support. That was really awesome to see. But also, you know, I've had folks reaching out to me saying, oh, shoot, I'm on the same stuff. I've got to make sure that I get off of it when I'm competing. Because I could be in the same situation as you are, right? So that makes me certainly feel better knowing that perhaps I help someone avoid some pretty crappy times, you know?
Yeah, obviously a cautionary tale going forwards, you know, not only from the point of view of actually taking medications, which, you know, I mean, let's face it, I mean, this is some life-saving medication, you know, I mean, stuff that you actually need to control your blood pressure on a day-to-day basis, but also a cautionary tale on, you know, just making sure that you read everything and that you don't miss anything on an iPad. You know, it's not the paper form anymore. You know, it's, you know, everything's gone electronic for better or for worse, you know. And you know, some things like this happen and have happened in your case, you know, and unfortunately you're in this predicament right now.
Right. So, you know, like we said earlier, right. You know, the fact that I didn't mention it during the test, really wouldn't matter either way. The drug is and was prohibited. What I sort of, where I messed up, and I posted that as a screen recording or you know, what kind of happened with when I got prescribed the medication. I went on the WADA website and I copied and pasted the name of the drug into the search box. And you can go on my Facebook or Instagram and sort of watch the screen recording. Now, the screen recording was taken in January of this year when I knew that, I'm going to have to go through this process, and I was trying to gather some evidence. And because when I first got notified, or, you know, second, when I was told that this is actually a big deal, you know, I just could not figure out why I wouldn't, like, what happened that I didn't see the medication. And I remembered that I actually did go on the website, search for it, and then just simply did not come up, right? Mm-hmm. Which is what sort of urged me to take that screen recording back in January. And it just so happens that the WADA website, if you look at it now, has been overhauled, updated.
Yeah.
And if you search for the same word, it does come up now.
Yeah, I'm seeing it right here.
Yeah, and this is something that played into a huge disadvantage during my appeal process, because the people in the committee making the decision simply were not able to grasp the fact that the website then has given me a different outcome than the website now, right? So again, you know, as I always said, it was a series of just little things here and there that resulted in this huge misunderstanding. This is certainly one of them, and it's a big one, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of me sort of verifying whether the medication is prohibited or not, I did then download the PDF form, or the PDF that kind of lists all these drugs. And I actually typed in the word hydrochlorothiazide, and nothing came in, or nothing sort of, showed up. And I do this for work, where I have to search PDF documents. And what I do as part of my process, you know, I type in a random common word, such as, I don't know, design or whatever, that mm-hmm. I know will be mentioned in the document, so I can verify that my computer and the PDF viewer has the ability to kind of search that document itself, right?
Indeed.
And come up with results. So I know that I did that, but then I typed in the word hydrochlorothiazide and nothing came up. And I don't know, you know, the only thing I can think of is just that I misspelled the word, you know? So, because it is fairly complicated. So that's sort of the another mishap there, on my part.
Yeah, it just seems to be a chain of unfortunate events. Nothing nefarious, nothing nefarious on your part was going on. I mean, you just happened to be at the wrong place, wrong time, wrong situation. You know, with the drug tester for starters, and you know, I mean, So that's what I can gather from this. But we're going to wrap up the podcast at this time. Now, typically, when I asked someone at the end who they want to thank, who they want to acknowledge, you know, in on the grand scheme of the subject that was discussed during the podcast, I'm sure that there are family members, people that have tried to help you out in this process. I'm sure you'd want to give them a mention and thank them for their support in what has to be a rather horrible process.
Yeah, I mean, definitely something that I wouldn't be able to get through on my own. It is sort of the closest friends and family that, you know, kind of help you work through such a dark times. Because again, you know, 15 months at 35 is certainly a career-changing, circumstance. But yeah, I have a great support team who know what I am about, who I can rely on 100%. So I think that, you know, without mentioning names, people know who they are. And, you know, if you listening to this podcast still have your doubts, you know, feel free to reach out to me. You know, I have literally zero things to hide. You know, and you might just find out something that you didn't know, or if I can help someone through the process or avoid it, you know, I'll be, it will make me happy.
And you can find Adam on adamsaddlemeyer.com. Also, he is on Instagram and on Facebook as well. There are definitely those outlets to get in touch with Adam. But thank you very much for taking the time to be on this podcast. This has been Adam Saddlemeyer on the TWBC podcast alongside me, Tony Lightfoot. And until next time, it is ciao for now.
Thank you for listening to the TWBC podcast. Be sure to check out our website at waterskibroadcasting.com. Links to our presence on major social media platforms can be found there, as well as updates to our webcast and this podcast. Duplication or rebroadcasting of this broadcast without written consent of TWBC is prohibited. Subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform and be sure to join us next time for the next edition of the TWBC podcast.